And say, ladies and gentlemen, good evening and welcome to Rangers America, episode 12. I am your host, Zeno Valent. With me, as usual, is my lovely and talented co-host, Gret.
Howdy.
And we're here to tell you about all the things that are going wrong in the United States. And if we find anything going right, we'll probably tell you about that too, but it seems more and more rare. So with that said, let's jump right into the news stories. Our first story of the night is from the Electronic Frontier Foundation about a new program that the federal government is trying to get pushed through Congress called Pass ID, which is just another form of the Real ID. In February, the opponents of Real ID were given a bit of hope when Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano said that she wanted to repeal the Real ID Act, the federal government's failed plan to impose a national identification card through state driver's licenses. But what has taken place since is no return to sanity, as political machinations have produced a cosmetic makeover called Pass ID that has revived the push for a national identification card. The Pass ID Act, S-1261, seeks to make many of the same ineffectual, dangerous changes the Real ID Act attempted to impose. Fundamentally, Pass ID operates on the same flawed premise of Real ID, that requiring various identity documents and storing that information in databases for later access will magically make state driver's licenses more legitimate, which will in turn improve national security. Proponents seem to be blind to the systemic impotence of such an identification card scheme. Individuals originally motivated to obtain and use fake IDs will instead use fake identity documents to procure, quote, real driver's licenses. Pass ID creates new risk. It calls for the scanning and storage of copies of applicants' identity documents, birth certificates, visas, etc. These documents will be stored in databases that will become leaky honeypots of sensitive personal data, prime targets for malicious identity thieves, or otherwise accessible by individuals authorized to obtain documents from the database. Despite some alterations to the scheme, Pass ID is still bad for privacy in many of the same ways the Real ID was. And proponents of the national ID effort seem blissfully unaware of the creepy implications of a papers please mentality that may grow from the issuance of mandatory federal identification cards. Despite token provisions that claim to give states the freedom to issue non-federal identification cards, the cards will be mandatory for most. The Pass ID Act seeks to require everyone to show the federally recognized ID for any official purpose, including boarding a plane or entering a federal building. At the moment, healthcare reform is commanding tremendous attention and effort on the Hill, so the Pass ID Act seems to be on the back burner for now. But after the August recess, anything can happen. So stay tuned for more about Pass ID and critical opportunities to flag your opposition to this flawed national ID scheme.
Yeah. They brought up healthcare, and that reminds me, one of the main reasons people are freaking out about healthcare is their socialized healthcare. So many people are afraid that all of their medical files from their entire life will be there for government bureaucrats to go over. I don't necessarily see that as the case, but that's a different matter. This is going to make it that every document pertaining to your ID virtually is going to be accessible by government bureaucrats.
Which is just as bad.
That would make me more upset.
If not worse, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't give a crap if some guy in Washington knows that I had an ear infection on such and such a date. Doesn't really affect me now because the ear infection is gone. But I don't really want them to know the time and date of my birth exactly. All the stuff that would be pertaining to who I am, like my social security number. I understand that that's necessary for federal things, but I don't want that in a situation where it could be leaked out to anyone who wants to get an ID and has the means of accessing it, because if you have that much information, you're going to have problems with security.
Yep, and also this, you know, if they have scans of all this stuff, they're going to be able to print that out and or take the scan and alter it and print out what they've altered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they've got copies of people's passports, visas, birth certificates. You know, take that copy, paste their own face in, and suddenly, bingo, they're you.
Yeah, I don't like
and then
the idea
they
of that.
Go and buy 20 guns from the local gun dealer and go shoot up the local high school, and you get blamed because you were the one that bought those guns.
Yeah.
Oh, that's real nice.
I think the only way that it could work is if they also did... Yeah, I say the only way, not the acceptable way. The only way it would work is if they did fingerprinting and DNA samples to go along with it, so that every time you did something that required your ID, it would be checked against it. Like I said, that's the only way I think it would work without fraud.
Right, but then anytime you use the federal ID, you would have to get fingerprinted, and that's just going to slow everything down.
Yeah.
Although, you know, that might be a little bit less security theater and a little bit more security in the airports these days. Because, frankly, the identification process they have in place right now is complete and utter crap.
Yeah, I can't speak from personal experience with that. I've never been on a plane or in an airport. So, I don't know about that.
You've never flown anywhere?
I'm afraid of heights.
It doesn't feel like you're high in a plane. No.
It's not supposed to feel like you're high on the side of a mountain either, but it's terrifying.
Hey, mountains are terrifying. I will give you that.
God, they're horrifying. Beautiful, but... I don't want to be on one again. So, all right, are we ready for the next article, or do you have anything else to say about the first one?
I think the people that keep trying to push these kind of things, should get voted out of office, and that's where I'm going to stop it.
Yeah, I agree. They're obviously not listening to the people who voted them in the first place, so they're not doing their job. Okay. Mexico enacts personal use drug law. Mexico City. Mexico decriminalized small amounts of marijuana, cocaine, and heroin on Friday, a move that prosecutors say makes sense even in the midst of the government's grueling battle against drug traffickers. Prosecutors said the new law sets clear limits that keep Mexico's corruption-prone police from shaking down casual users and offers addicts free treatment to keep growing domestic drug use in check. This is not legalization. This is regulating the issue and giving citizens greater legal certainty, said Bernardo Espino del Castillo of the Attorney General's office. The new law sets out maximum personal use amounts for drugs, also including LSD and methamphetamine. People detained with those quantities no longer face criminal prosecution. Espino del Castillo says in practice, small users almost never did face charges anyway. Under the previous law, the possession of any amount of drugs was punishable by stiff jail sentences, but there was leeway for addicts caught with smaller amounts. We couldn't charge somebody who was in possession of a dose of a drug. There was no way, because the person would claim that they were an addict, he said. Despite the provisions, police sometimes hauled in suspects and demanded bribes, threatening long jail sentences if people did not pay. The bad thing was that this was left up to the discretion of the detective, and it could open a door for corruption or extortion, Espino del Castillo said. Anyone caught with drug amounts under the new personal use limit will be encouraged to seek treatment, and for those caught a third time, treatment is mandatory. The maximum amount of marijuana for personal use under the new law is 5 grams, the equivalent of about 4 joints. The limit is a half gram for cocaine, the equivalent of about 4 lines. For other drugs, the limits are 50 milligrams of heroin, 40 milligrams of methamphetamines, and 0.015 milligrams for LSD. Mexico has emphasized the need to differentiate drug addicts and casual users from the violent traffickers whose turf battles have contributed to the deaths of more than 11,000 people since President Felipe Calderón took office in late 2006. But one expert saw potential for conflict under the new law. Javier Olivia, a political scientist at Mexico's National Autonomous University, said the new law posed a serious contradiction for the Calderón administration. If they decriminalize drugs, it could lead the army, which has been given the task of combating this, to say, "What are we doing?" he said. Officials said the legal changes could help the government focus more on big-time traffickers. Espino del Castillo said since Calderón took office, there have been over 15,000 police searches related to small-scale drug dealing of possession, with 95,000 people detained, but only 12% to 15% of whom were ever charged with anything.
I don't think they took this far enough.
No,
they
no, should have. No.
They need to decriminalize it entirely, or not change the rules at all.
Well, I think I have a very strong opinion about this. Big shocker, I know. I don't think that certain drugs should be tolerated at all. But I think that almost any drug that occurs naturally, like pot or mushrooms or a few other things that don't need to be either critically adulterated to where they're not recognizable as what they originally were or are completely synthetic, I don't think those should be allowed. I think something that occurs naturally, perfectly fine. I think something that if it's processed a little bit, like opium, I'm not completely against opium. I don't see that as being a horrible thing. Heroin, I see as bad. It depends on the amount of processing done to the product and all that stuff, but if it's recognizable as being naturally occurring, or if it is naturally occurring, then I'm okay with it. But there are a few exceptions, because I'm a crazy person who contradicts herself at every turn. So
okay, you're allowed to do that if you want. My personal opinion is that what I put into my body is between me and my doctor. And the government should not get involved whatsoever.
Well, yeah, I can agree with that to a point. But things like meth, that's different. That doesn't just affect the person. That affects the children of the person involved and the community because of the tragedies associated with it.
Well, here's my take on it. The fact that you are using a drug does not change your legal status whatsoever.
No.
If you are
that's
drunk or high or stoned out of your mind on whatever it is you happen to like taking, if you're not behaving in a responsible manner and you do something illegal, you should be punished for whatever crime you committed.
Yes.
While using that drug. As harshly as you would have been punished if you had been completely sober and clean.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I'm not saying that the drug use itself should be punished. I'm saying that, like, manufacturing and selling certain drugs should be legal. If you happen to get a hold of it and you take it and you do something stupid, you should be punished just as if you were sober, because you chose to take that drug. No one forced it on you. It was a conscious decision on your part. And if you're an addict, the first time you took that drug, you made the conscious choice to become an addict. And I think that with any abuse, and any substance that can be abused, and I guess for alcohol as well, the very first time you participate in taking that substance, you're making the choice that, okay, this is what could happen, I'm going to deal with the consequences, and saying, right. Oh, I'm an addict.
You have to understand the risk of what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. If you can't understand the risk, you're obviously not smart enough to be handling something on your own. So, I don't know. I come from a family of alcoholics and people who have abused drugs for a very long time. That's why I have my opinions about this. But if you know the risks and you're still willing to accept it, you need to deal with those consequences and not blame an addiction that you chose to take part in. Addiction is a different matter than the actual manufacturing of certain... It's, you know, you don't need to be an addict to manufacture a drug, but the manufacturer can push onto an addict. So that's basically where my stance on it is. Using it and manufacturing it are two different things.
Okay. I don't think we have any more that hasn't already been said on that one.
Right, just repeating myself, sorry.
And it's not like we haven't covered drugs occasionally on the show before.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. I'm sure people understand our positions. So, let's go ahead.
They're not paying close enough attention.
Exactly. Let's go ahead and move on to the next story. And this is actually an opinion piece, but... I hope the guy turns out to be right. Gun owners' next victory in D.C. The Supreme Court in District of Columbia versus Heller declared that Washington's 32-year ban on all functional firearms violated the Second Amendment. Justice Antonin Scalia's majority opinion, however, applied only to possession of guns in the House. The court did not address, and was not asked to address, firearms carried outside the home. That's the issue posed in a new lawsuit against the district by Tom Palmer and four other plaintiffs, represented by Alan Gura, the lawyer who successfully argued Heller before the court. After Heller, the district relaxed its ban on residents seeking to register a pistol for use in self-defense within that person's home. But D.C. law still states that no person shall carry within the District of Columbia, either openly or concealed on or about their person, a pistol without a license. Currently, the city affords no process by which to issue such a license. A first violation of the carry ban is punishable by a fine of up to $5,000 and imprisonment for up to 5 years. Does the Constitution mandate that the nation's capital allow firearms to be carried outside the home? The right to bear arms, the court said in Heller, is an individual right unconnected to militia service. To bear means to carry. More specifically, when used with arms, the opinion said, bear means carrying for a particular purpose, confrontation. Nothing in that formulation implies a right that can be exercised only within one's home. Indeed, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, although she dissented in Heller, cited Black's Law Dictionary to suggest a prior opinion that the Second Amendment entails a right to wear, bury, or carry, upon the person or in the clothing or in a pocket, armed and ready, in a case of conflict with another person. That language, says Michael O'Shea in the West Virginia Law Review, reads like a literal description of the practice of lawful concealed carry, as engaged in by millions of Americans in the 48 states that authorize the carrying of concealed firearms. Of course, Second Amendment rights, like First Amendment rights, are not absolute. Scalia was careful to note that nothing in our opinion should be taken to cast doubt on long-standing public longstanding prohibitions on the possession of firearms by felons and the mentally ill, or laws forbidding the carrying of firearms in sensitive places such as schools and government buildings, or laws imposing conditions and qualifications on the commercial sale of arms. Lawyers call such statements dicta, a statement not necessarily to the holding and, therefore, not binding in other cases. Nonetheless, dicta can be important. Gura, for that reason, took pains to fashion his new complaint to fit Scalia's framework. The Palmer lawsuit acknowledged that Washington retains the ability to regulate the manner of carrying handguns, prohibit the carrying of handguns in specific, narrowly defined sensitive places, prohibit the carrying of arms that are not within the scope of the Second Amendment protection, and disqualify specific, particularly dangerous individuals from carrying handguns. Restrictions on carrying are permissible, but an outright ban is not. As Gura put it, the district may not completely ban the carrying of handguns for self-defense, deny individuals the right to carry handguns in non-sensitive places, or deprive individuals of the right to carry handguns in an arbitrary and capricious manner. Proponents of a total ban have seized on another of Scalia's pronouncements in Heller. He pointed out that 19th century courts considered prohibitions on carrying concealed weapons lawful under the Second Amendment or state analogs. That statement, too, is dicta. Perhaps more significant, open carry rather than concealed carry was the preferred mode of arms bearing in the 19th century. To be sure, some states prohibited concealed carry, but only because they allowed open carry, an alternative that the district would reject. An early Georgia case, for example, upheld a concealed carry ban, but struck down an open carry ban. Ditto for other cases cited in Heller. Essentially, the Second Amendment demands that peaceable citizens be allowed to carry defensive weapons in some manner. The right to bear arms can be limited, but it cannot be destroyed. Prediction: the courts will, and should, invalidate Washington's unconditional ban on carrying, as well as similar bans in Wisconsin and Illinois, the only two states to have such bans. Regulations consistent with the Heller opinion will be permitted. But the Supreme Court has affirmed that the Second Amendment secures an individual right, expressly enumerated in the Constitution. That means government has the burden of demonstrating that its proposed regulations are necessary.
I have a feeling that the lawmakers for Washington, D.C. are not going to be too happy about being forced to issue concealed carry permits.
Nope. I
think they're stupid for holding that position, because there are lots of criminals in Washington, D.C., and I don't just mean Congress, even though they probably are. And the criminals are pretty unlikely to, you know, stop carrying their pistols because they don't have a concealed carry license.
Yeah.
And the people should be able to defend themselves against those criminals.
Exactly. I don't understand. I mean, laws are meant to not only restrict, but to protect. And laws are enforced only on law-abiding citizens. If you want to be a criminal, you're going to be a criminal.
Law-abiding citizens obey the law because they don't want to go to jail.
Yes.
The criminals have decided that it's more important for them to do whatever criminal act it is that they're doing.
Well, yeah. I'm not saying that laws are important one way or the other. I'm just saying I think in most cases there are some laws that I agree should be in place and should be enforced, but in most cases they're kind of just there to make people feel better.
Yes, quite a lot of them are.
they're not really effective, I guess is what I'm getting at. If a law is useful and helpful, it's most likely going to be followed and obeyed. If it's not useful and it's hindering more than helping, it's not going to be followed. People aren't going to abide that law. And that I'm familiar with, the majority of laws that are restricting and unnecessary are the ones that people who are after money will look for the people going against those laws and breaking those laws. I mean, there are stupid laws everywhere. I know Nebraska had a law, I don't know if it's still in effect or not, but they had a law that in Lay, Nebraska, it was illegal to sell donut holes. In Omaha, if your child belched in church, you could be thrown in jail. There are stupid laws everywhere.
Those are some really weird laws.
Nebraska is a really weird state.
And I thought Florida was messed up.
It's just kind of my point. Some laws are actually effective and need to be on the books, but the majority of them are just stupid.
Mm-hmm. A lot of laws just make the cops waste time trying to enforce them, even though they're going to be broken constantly, virtually everywhere.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And you know, you'd have to have 40% of the population be policemen in order to completely enforce the law.
You would need one cop for every citizen and make sure that none of those cops were corrupt. It's not a manageable task. I think it goes back a couple... It just reminds me a couple months ago with the right to resist arrest. If it's illegal in your state, that's a stupid law. You can't defend yourself. It shouldn't matter who you're defending yourself against if there's a legitimate reason.
Right.
I mean, if you have a legitimate reason that is not attributed to criminal behavior or, like, I guess damaging criminal behavior or mental illness, it's like a legitimate reason for breaking that law, that should be taken into account. I mean, obviously there's a flaw if anyone can come up with a legitimate reason to break the law. I'm just rhyming now, I'm gonna shut up.
There's like you said, there are legitimate reasons that you would want to break certain laws, and you know, sometimes those types of things are spelled out as exceptions to the law, but that seems to be rare rather than common. The people in government seem to like the idea of controlling everyone. So you know, like I've said before, people that desire power are not people that you want in power.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, the political system in the United States tends to have people that seek power getting power, so...
Well, yeah, they're the ones making all the noise and drawing everyone's attention.
Yep. So, I don't know, maybe we do have the government we deserve.
Because
we didn't like them.
Want, need, and deserve. Three very different things.
Yes.
I think that should be explained to my generation.
Yes.
Okay. And is there anything left to say before we just go into a government bashing spiel?
No, I think we should go into a government bashing spiel now. you want to take part one of this, and I'll take part two?
No, I'll become incoherent within 30 seconds. I'm so fed up. was my local government. Oh, they suck. They suck so hard.
Yep.
You write a letter to one of them, and then you get a response back.
It says, saying, "We're so happy that you wrote to us to tell us what you think, and here's what I'm going to vote for, even though it's absolutely the opposite of what you said."
Yeah. Yeah. And then I wrote to another representative, and the response I got back, like, I'd written him looking for a specific response. I'd asked a question, and I was hoping to get an answer back. The answer I got was basically an explanation of why they could not answer me. And it wasn't even a hard question. I was just asking about... There's no security threats or reputation risk. I was asking a question about a bill that was trying to be passed, just trying to understand it. And instead of explaining it to me like a decent representative should, they basically said, "I'm gonna hope you're an idiot and that this excuse will throw you off." I'm glad I didn't vote for any of them.
Yep.
But then again, the people I vote for usually deserve to get in, and that's why they don't. All right. I think we should move on. Yes. I'm distracted by the word in this next article. It's just staring me in the face.
Okay. Which word is that?
Butt cracks.
Okay.
Animal house in Afghanistan. Drunken brawls, prostitutes, hazings, and humiliation. Taking vodka shots out of butt cracks. There's the word. No... The perpetrators of these animal house-like antics aren't some depraved frat boys. They are the private security contractors guarding Camp Sullivan, otherwise known as the U.S. Embassy in Kabul. These allegations, and many more, are contained in a letter sent by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton on...
Sent
to Secretary of... Two. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton on Tuesday by the Project on Government Oversight, which has been investigating the embassy security contract held by Armor Group North America, a subsidiary of
Wackenhut.
Wackenhut.
Pretty funny,
the words
huh?
Words just get better. Okay. Which is in turn owned by the security behemoths G4S. The contractor of this subject of a was the subject of a congressional probe earlier this summer that found serious lapses in the economy's handling of the embassy's security contract, which internal State Department documents said left the embassy compound in jeopardy. Nevertheless, the government opted to extend the company's five-year, $189 million contract for another year. If my speech gets slurred, I'm sorry. There are so many weird things going through my head right now, including butt crack and Wackenhut. Okay. Underscoring the scope of the problems within Armor Group's Afghanistan operation, POGO says that nearly a tenth of the company's 450-man embassy security force contacted the watchdog group to express concerns about and provide evidence of a pattern of blatant, long-standing violations of the security contract and of a pervasive breakdown in the chain of command and guard force discipline and morale. In the letter to Clinton, POGO Executive Director Daniel Bryan writes, "This environment has resulted in chronic turnover by U.S. expat guards, according to the State Department. Nearly 90% of the incumbent U.S. expats left within the first 6 months of contract performance. According to POGO sources, the U.S. expat guard turnover may be as high as 100% annually. This untenable turnover prevents the guard force from developing team cohesion and requires constant training for new replacement recruits. The guards have come to POGO because they say they believe strongly in the mission, but are concerned that many good guards are quitting out of frustration or being fired for refusing to participate in the misconduct, and that those responsible for the misconduct are not being held accountable. Brian's letter suggests that Wackenhut Vice President Sam Brinkley, who testified before a Senate panel in June about Armor Group's performance of the embassy contract, may have misled Congress. Despite Wackenhut Vice President Sam Brinkley's sworn Senate testimony that the Kabul contract has been fully staffed since January 2009, the truth is that chronic understaffing of the Guard force continues to be a major problem, and evidence suggests Mr. Brinkley knew that. Around March, according to numerous participants, he was confronted by some 50 guards at Camp Sullivan who complained to him directly about a severe ongoing guard shortage. Then, in an April 2009 memo to a State Department official, U.S. Embassy Kabul Guard Force Commander Werner Illich reported that guard shortages had caused chronic sleep deprivation among his men. He described a situation in which guards habitually face 14-hour day work cycles extending for as many as 8 weeks in a row, frequently alternating between day and night shifts. He concluded that this ultimately diminishes the LGF's, local guard force's, ability to provide security. The contract with the State Department specifies that guards may not be on duty for longer than 12 consecutive hours. Interviewees and documents reveal that short staffing... Interviewees and documents reveal that short staffing frequently results in the denial of contractually guaranteed leave and vacation, and that those who do not comply are threatened with termination or actually fired. But criticisms of failing to meet manpower obligations are nothing compared to the bacchanalian activities Armor Group's personnel were allegedly engaged in. I like the use of the word bacchanalian. Guards have come to Pogo with allegations and photographic evidence that some supervisors and guards are engaging in near-weekly deviant hazing and humiliation of subordinates. Witnesses report at the highest level of AGNA management in Kabul are aware of and have personally observed or even engaged in these activities, but have done nothing to stop them. Indeed, management has condoned this misconduct, declining to take disciplinary action against those responsible and allowing two of the worst offending supervisors to resign and allegedly move on to work on other U.S. contracts. The lewd and deviant behavior of approximately 30 supervisors and guards has resulted in complete distrust of leadership and a breakdown of the chain of command, compromising security. Numerous emails, photographs, and videos portray a Lord of the Flies environment. One email from a current guard describes scenes in which guards and supervisors are peeing on people, eating potato chips out of buttock cracks, vodka shots out of buttock cracks. There is video of that one. Broken doors after drunken brawls, threats, and intimidation from those leaders participating in this activity. Photograph after photograph shows guards, including supervisors, at parties in various stages of nudity, sometimes fondling each other. These parties take place just a few yards from the housing of other supervisors. Multiple guards say this deviant hazing has created a climate of fear and coercion, and those who decline to participate often ridiculed, humiliated, demoted, or even fired. The result is an environment that is dangerous and volatile. Some guards have reported barricading themselves in their rooms for fear that those carrying out the hazing will harm them physically. Others have reported that AGNA management has begun to conduct a witch hunt to identify employees who have provided information about this atmosphere to Pogo. These allegations raise serious questions about why Armor Group has been allowed to retain this important contract, which gives the company the responsibility for protecting the lives of the hundreds of diplomats, officials, and others who work within the embassy compound. Also in question is the State Department's ability to provide adequate oversight of contractors under its jurisdiction. It should at least be able to ensure that its embassy doesn't provide a backdrop for a contractor's gone wild video. Pogo is calling on the State Department to launch an independent investigation of the Kabul embassy contract and to consider initiating suspension and debarment proceedings against the company's Armor Group North America. As for the State Department officials, who are supposed to be providing oversight, the watchdog says they, too, should be held accountable. Perhaps as punishment, they ought to be forced to watch the butt-crack vodka shot video. Update, the State Department responds, plus, why did a top state official tell Congress in June that Armor Group's performance in Afghanistan has been and is sound, when internal documents suggest he had reason to believe otherwise? Part 2. State Department responds to Armor Group allegations. When State Department spokesman Ian Kelly woke up this morning, he may have been anticipating some tough queries from reporters, but he probably wasn't expecting to field questions about U.S. Embassy guards in Kabul engaging in what the Project on Government Oversight has described as deviant hazing and humiliation, acts that allegedly include peeing on people, eating potato chips out of ass cracks, vodka shots out of ass cracks. These are very serious allegations, and we are treating them that way, Kelly told reporters at a briefing this afternoon after Pogo sent a letter to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton detailing a host of charges relating to Armor Group's $189 million contract to provide security for the U.S. Embassy. Kelly said Clinton had been informed of the allegations and noted that the matter had been referred to the State Department's Inspector General. Kelly added that the State Department has zero tolerance for the type of conduct that is alleged in these documents. Yet the State Department seems to have had quite a bit of tolerance for Armor Group's lapses. As one reporter pointed out at the briefing, internal State Department documents dated back to 2007 have raised serious concerns about Armor Group's handling of the embassy's contract. In July 2007, the State Department alerted the company that it had found deficiencies in its work that endangered performance of the contract to such a degree that the security of the U.S. Embassy in Kabul is in jeopardy. 2 months later, the agency threatened to terminate the contract outright because the company had provided too few guards. Despite Armor Group's track record, Assistant Secretary of State for Logistics Management William Moser told a Senate panel in June that at no time was the security of American personnel at the U.S. Embassy compromised. He claimed that we work with Armor Group to correct the problems that have been identified. And he maintained that the performance on the ground by Armor Group North America has been and is sound. There's surely nothing about the allegations Pogo investigation turned up. And it's not as if the watchdog group was relying on the claims of a few disgruntled employees either. According to Pogo, nearly a tenth of the company's embassy 450-person security force individually contacted the group with a host of serious concerns. So why did Moser go out of his way to defend Armor Group to Congress? I'll have to ask Mr. Moser, Kelly told reporters. I'm not exactly sure what he's basing his determination on. I'm looking forward to finding out. I bet Secretary Clinton is, too. I really like their acronyms.
I really like the way you say Kabul.
That's Kabul for a lot of people, but I like Kabul better. It's more fun to say than Kabul. Makes me think of a road and horses.
Yes. But anyway, about these jackasses that work for, what was the name of the company they worked directly for?
Armor Group North America?
Yeah. Armor Group North America. A subsidiary of Whack and Hut. I'm surprised that
I like
any company would put up with this kind of shenanigans.
I wouldn't. Every single one of those fuckers will be fired. Sorry for the language.
That's exactly how I feel, too.
It would be to be out of a job. That's, you know, unacceptable.
I was reading over this yesterday, getting prepared, and I was thinking that, you know, all those guys that you didn't like in high school because they were
you know, jocks that only made it through high school because their teachers were told to give them passing grades because they were good football players. This is where they ended up.
Probably.
And guess what? Just like when they were in high school, they don't do anything but party and slack off and not deal with the shit they're supposed to be dealing with.
Mm-hmm. If a government of a country... This goes back to everything the government's supposed to be managing and it's not. There are rules for a reason. Just like laws. Some are stupid, some are not. If you're hired to protect and guard people, I sure as shit better never find you taking a vodka shot off your coworker's ass crack. Because you will be out the door and you will not see a cent. That is putting the people you are supposed to protect in jeopardy. Because if you're drunk enough to be fondling your coworker and drinking out of their butt, you're
not... And many people take pictures of it.
Yeah, you're obviously not sober enough. You obviously don't have good enough judgment to protect anyone. I don't even know what to say about if anyone... Obviously, people in the government knew. Obviously, people who were supposed to make sure this shit didn't happen knew. They are just as responsible. And they need to get their... They all need to get their asses handed to them.
Yes, and they do.
It's not even a matter of what they're protecting. It's that they were supposed to be protecting it.
And were fucking around instead.
It's ridiculous. It pisses me off. I don't give a crap what they thought they were doing. You obviously weren't doing your job.
And people who don't do their jobs should get fired.
Yeah. If I did that at my job...
And the supervisors who are watching people not do their jobs should get fired for not doing the supervising job.
Exactly. If I did any of that crap at my job, while it would be highly entertaining and bring in more customers, I would probably get fired.
Yes.
I mean, if I'm not sober on my job, and my job does not involve me being drunk, I'm not doing my job.
Is there a job that involves getting drunk? Because I want to find it.
Probably. A lot of bartenders are allowed to drink on the job, and...
Yeah, but you can't bartend if you've drunk so much that you...
No, that's why you drink later in the night. But, I just... You should look that up later. Jobs that involve being drunk. I just don't understand how anyone who does something like that can keep their job. I've lost jobs for less. I really have. I know people who have lost jobs for less. People who were damn good workers, and they've lost their job because the company didn't want to pay them. Our government's paying you almost $200 million, and you can't freaking keep your clothes on and keep your face away from your coworker's ass. It's ridiculous. And for that kind of money, you'd think they want to be making sure what's going on and making sure none of this crap could happen. Especially freaking after the whole Gitmo thing with all those pictures that came out. What the hell is the matter with our government? They're too freaking stupid to run themselves. It doesn't matter which administration they're in. God. If you're hiring people who do stupid shit and let photos get taken of it, you're worthless.
Uh-huh. You know what? I just... went back to the site that I got this from, the second article, the update, and they now have a link to some of the photos.
Oh, fantastic. You need to link that to me.
If you've got the running order up on your computer, just follow the second link on the story.
Totally will.
And I will post these links. Now that I have a an account to post things on the Rangers.com website. Sweet. I can do that.
Yeah, Kobach did some work for Log Network, so you can also access Rangers from the new site now. It's basically just a white page with some words, but you can navigate it a little bit. You can still access the beta site, but only if you try really, really hard. So, yeah, if you want to go to Log Network, you can get to Rangers. There's a link at the very top. Big words, Rangers. Click on that, and you can find all of our updates that have been put up there as well.
Cool.
I have too many links open.
No, you don't. You just don't have enough RAM.
Holy hell. Yeah. That's
shocking,
not
isn't it?
What I would have my security guard look like. If I caught my security guard doing that,
they wouldn't be a security guard very long, would they?
No, they probably would never drink again in their life either. They'd have that bottle wedged so far up their ass, they, you know, be sticking out their mouth. That's ridiculous. What is on his boobs? What is that?
I don't know.
Okay. I see big black patches where his nipple should be, like something either pasted on or removed.
I'm not even going to speculate. I really am not. Instead, I'm just going to move on to our next story about the military canceling their reporter rating contract that I didn't even know they had. A week ago, Stars and Stripes broke the story that U.S. forces in Afghanistan had hired the Rendon Group, a D.C.-based media consulting firm, to write assessments of war reporters. The profiles rated journalists as positive, negative, or neutral towards U.S. war aims, and were apparently used to deny reporters access to military units, according to follow-on reports by Stars and Stripes. On Sunday, the military canceled Rendon's contract. As the senior U.S. communicator in Afghanistan, it was clear that the issue of Rendon's support to U.S. It was clear that the issue of Rendon's support to U.S. forces in Afghanistan had become a distraction from our main mission, Rear Admiral Gregory J. Smith said in an email to Stars and Stripes. Earlier, former ABC war reporter Bob Zelnick told Danger Room that reporters had the power to change policy by protesting Rendon's activities. "I'd take it right to the top," Zelnick said. Several reporters did just that, demanding to senior public affairs officials to see their profiles. Others, including PJ Tobia and Nir Rosen, pictured, published their profiles online. Paul McLeary at Ares wondered if the reaction wasn't a bit overblown. "While a bad move on the military's part, I don't see the Rendon contract as being as insidious as some would have it," he wrote. "What they're doing, essentially, is the job that any good public affairs officer should be doing. Namely, a little background research on what kind of stories the reporter in question normally publishes, in order to give their commanders an idea on what to expect. It's called a Google search, and spending taxpayer money to hire a contractor to perform such a simple task, and rating the reporter's work on such a crude scale, is more of a crime in my book than producing such background reports in general. Indeed, it's not clear that the Pentagon will actually end its policy of profiling reporters. It's possible the process will simply be assigned to military personnel, rather than being contracted out." So, hey, you know that free press we're supposed to have in the United States? Apparently not.
Yeah. Every day I'm surprised I don't get a knock on the door. I don't know, maybe in preparation, if I ever do have a son, I'll name him Winston.
Middle name Churchill?
No.
Smith?
Yeah, that's what I was going for.
Because, you know, those are the two obvious ones.
Mm-hmm. If it's a girl, it has to be Julia, you know?
Right. So, I think that the military doing this kind of makes sense. I don't like it, but obviously they're not going to want to be portrayed negatively. Which I think is, being portrayed negatively is kind of inevitable for an organization that is designed around the main goal of killing people. So I think they are going to have to take their lumps at some point. But making it this obvious was clearly a bad move. And that's pretty much all I've got to say on this one. Reporter who wrote this said, you have to wonder whether they're going to continue to rate reporters and just have that assigned to somebody in the military instead of contracting it out. But
I think
at least if they have somebody in the military do it, they can tell them, you know, hey, don't talk to reporters about what you're doing.
I think as far as anything government or military goes, the fewer contracts that they have, the better. I know a lot of contracts are done because you can get the cheapest bid and go with that, but sometimes it's just not worth it to come off as so incompetent, depending on what the situation is. If you don't need to contract something out, your best bet's gonna be your best bet's gonna be not to do it in the first place. It really is just that simple. If you have someone who has the capability and the means of doing that said job, give it to them. If they don't want it and there's someone else, find that other person. You don't freaking need to get someone outside to do it. You don't need to involve more people than necessary. It's like you want to make bread, so you invite the whole neighborhood over. It's not gonna help. It's gonna make it more difficult.
If you're Amish and you want to put up a new barn, then you invite the whole neighborhood
exactly.
over.
Exactly. Then it's helpful.
Then it's helpful, and you can get it done a lot more quickly.
Yeah, and then y'all get to gorge afterwards.
But if you're just making dinner for the family, then just, you only really need one person to do that.
Yeah, maybe two at the most.
And the military gets involved in a lot of very complex projects, but I'm sure they could bring in, supervisory people and technical experts on a contract basis and get things done a lot more quickly that way. But there's a lot of stuff that they just don't need to farm out to contractors.
There are a lot of smart people in the military. And I know it's stupid. There are a lot of people that I know personally who don't realize that. They don't know that really intelligent people join the military. That everyone doesn't join because it'll pay for college or it's something to do. They join because they have a good reason to join, and that's their personal reason. I don't need to judge it, but there are a lot of intelligent people in the military. We're not using the resources we have available to us as a nation, whether it's government, military, civilian, it doesn't matter. We're not using the resources available to us. We're relying on other people to do it for us, and that's been happening more and more, and it's going to continue to happen more and more, and we need to stop that, or at least reduce it.
Mm-hmm.
We're all very capable of doing things for ourselves. We do not need to find other people to do things for us. I'm a very lazy housekeeper. When my parents are here, they're out of town right now. I'm keeping the kitchen pretty damn clean. I'm trying to keep the living room clean when I'm here. soon as I leave, my brother brings his kids up here, and it's a mess when I get home again. But I'm trying, and I'm doing a good job. I don't need to bring someone else in to do it for me just because the people who typically do it aren't here. That's the same exact thing. If you have someone in the military who can do the job, you don't need to hire someone else to do it. Use the resources that are available to you.
But unfortunately, we've become a nation of lazy fat asses who would rather spend money and get other people to do work for us than do it ourselves.
Yeah, definitely.
And like, people who are listening to this are probably not those kind of people, because they had to go out and, you know, find this kind of independent media on their own.
Yeah, exactly. There's so many. There are commercials for maids and maid services. You don't freaking want to dust your TV every day. You don't need to freaking dust your TV every day. Do it every 2 weeks if it's that big of a deal. Or do it whenever you can't see the picture anymore.
Yeah, and it takes you, what, 10 seconds to dust your
TV?
Exactly.
It's
not like it's taking you hours to do it.
It's not a lot of work. People make everything more work than they need to. Cooking, not that hard to do. All you need to do is figure out what everything is for, and then you're pretty much set. Or do what I did. Watch the Food Network for 20 years.
Yes.
Then you don't need to go out and make things a hassle. You just, okay, I'm going to try to do that. And you try it. If it doesn't work, try it again. Try something else. Gardening, not that big of a deal. You don't need a whole bunch of different equipment to garden.
No.
You need a shovel and seeds.
A shovel, some seeds, depending on where you are, maybe some chicken wire to keep the squirrels out.
Yeah,
and
that'll just invite them in.
and a plot of land that you can put seeds in.
Yeah,
and you don't even really need the land. You can do it in containers.
Yeah, you want to drive?
It's been done in urban areas for years.
Yeah, totally. It's people make everything more difficult than it needs to be. And if they have money, they make it more unnecessary than they need to.
Something you said a minute ago reminds me of something that I thought of a couple days back. We should do an independent cooking show.
I tried that. I have a recorded sample.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, neat.
I could try to send it to you if you'd like.
Yes, that would be awesome. Because, I mean, honestly, why should Emeril and Rachel Ray have all the fun?
Yeah! Just because they're more known.
Yeah.
But I agree. I remember that episode of Patrolling where Sean was cooking.
Yes, that was a little bit ridiculous what he cooked.
I still liked it. It was fun. Because he had this whole persona when it came to cooking.
Yes, he does, definitely.
He made a good point. If you are a WOG, or if you're just a very efficient person, you don't want things to take forever. There are a lot of good foods where the prep time takes longer than the actual cook time. And the prep is really easy. It's like if you want to make homemade bean, anything, soup, dips, barbecue beans, anything you want. All you need to do is get the right kind of bean, and you can learn about that on the internet, which most of us spend most of our time in front of anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Find the right kind of bean, buy it, sort through to make sure there aren't any stones or cracked beans, because those won't be any good. Soak them according to the directions on the bag. Not hard. And then you use them.
Yes.
And most
Very
of the
easy.
Cooking out there you don't even need to pay attention to. It's
yep.
just throw everything in a pot and you're good to go.
There's a lot of stuff out there. It's you spend 5 minutes figuring out what the ingredients are, putting them in some kind of cooking vessel, whether that's a pot, a crock pot, it's something that can go in the oven.
Yeah.
And then you turn your stove on, you put everything on the stove and wait for however long.
Yeah, you know,
the total amount of time that you spend on, you know, doing stuff to get it in place is 5-10 minutes. And yeah, the overall cooking might be 45 minutes, but you've expended hardly any energy, and you get to eat it at the end.
Yeah, it's like you're only actually working for 5 to 10 of those minutes. And granted, me, I'd like to be right there. I enjoy cooking. It's an art form to me, so I'm there. It's literally in my face. Not on, because that would burn. In my face. So...
Well, yes, it is.
We should totally do this. I just gotta figure out what the hell days I have off.
Yes.
Some time for that.
Too bad that we're so far apart from each other, because I would show up at your house and film it.
Yeah. This could be fun. I'll have Kobach do it. I'll talk him into it.
Awesome.
So.
Okay, but that's all we got from news stories.
And ranting.
We always rant.
Yeah, we do.
I guess we should give out some likes. So that would be WAGNetwork. Is it .com?
Yes.
Okay, yes, and yes. Of course our inspiration, Rant Media at rantmedia.ca. And do we want to plug anybody else's site?
More shameless self-promotion. Kobach has started posting little, like, helpful camping tips on our blog.
That would be 90 Degree Studios, correct?
Yes. And it's... I'm a horrible person. I don't even remember what my own site is. 90 Degrees... Okay, that looks weird. That doesn't look right.
It's 90DegreeStudios.com. Okay.
Yes, there is no www in front of it. It's just, yeah.
Really? Because it worked with the www in front of it.
Really? It will. It will, but there isn't supposed to be one.
Hmm. Okay.
But yeah, he's been posting kit news and photos and how-to instructional things. He recently posted something on how to do steam baking with muffins if you're awesome. Camping.
Because muffins rule.
Yes, they do, if they're the right kind of muffin. But he's going to do more pictures with a new setup, because what he did was kind of, you know, if it's just random, you decide to go for it for the moment. What he has now, he's actually, I think he sells tested, but he actually made a setup with, like, those aluminum covers you can get for disposable roasting pans.
Mm-hmm.
He made a steam grid to use instead of what he had before, which was rocks, to hold the tin up out of the water.
Very cool.
So he's made it more stable, and I think he's going to post pictures of that.
Awesome.
And you can follow his RSS feed on that as well.
Yes, I have it in my Google Reader feed currently.
I've never actually looked at it. This is the first time I'm looking at it.
RSS feeds are one of those things that I can't decide if they're incredibly brilliant or incredibly stupid.
A little bit of both, depending
exactly.
on...
Exactly. Because it's a great idea that I can plug all of the URLs into one program or one website and just see the updates as they come in. But the actual implementation behind how they wrote it is really stupid, because it returns the same so many items, you know, every time you check it. It's got no way to say, I've seen all of the articles up to, you know,
this point, yeah.
September 1st, so give me everything that was posted after that.
Yeah. I don't have one, so I don't have that problem. I'm going to use this phrase. I'm old school when it comes to surfing the web. I actually surf the web. And I go site by site to everything, and I have a lot of sites. So it typically takes me a few hours.
Yeah, I used to do it that way.
Firefox helps a little bit because you can open up a folder's worth of links in tabs. Mm-hmm. So I have a bunch of stuff that I look at that way. Mm-hmm. But Google
Reader, that's what I do.
Is pretty nice for anybody that actually provides an RSS feed that's formatted properly. I've run into a few places that have RSS feeds that just completely break their formatting. And that's not very good at all. So.
Yeah. I swear, I'm going to just... way off topic. I'm going to destroy the sound system at work. Freaking have a song. It's like bad 70s love music. It's horrible.
As long as it's not a bad 70s porno soundtrack.
There might be one or two songs. It's horrible. You have Barry White playing. And Michael Jackson, Prince. It's bad. It's Michael Jackson when he was still black.
Okay, that's not too bad.
No, that's probably the only decent stuff on there. But I have that Rock the Boat song stuck in my head.
Uh-huh.
That's horrible.
That is horrible. That's really, really bad. Okay, do we have anything for recommended media?
Yes.
I probably
said this last week, too. I can't remember, because my brain is deteriorating.
And besides, it was 2 weeks ago, not last week.
Yeah, whenever. See, there you go. The new Whole Foods Encyclopedia. Good book. Everyone should have one.
But I don't have to eat the entire cow, do I?
I don't think it mentions cow. But it was published in 99. So it's a little bit older. But it has a really big... it covers a lot. And it's not just... the foods, I guess it covers like food families like carrots and the cabbage family and stuff like that, but it says it lists their medicinal properties as well and what organs that they're supposed to help treat if there's problems or damage, like if you have lung congestion of a various type, it'll tell you which food to eat for that. It's pretty neat.
Interesting.
It also briefly touches on Ayurvedic and Chinese medicine. So,
okay.
If anyone knows what Ayurveda is. I'm probably saying that wrong, and anyone who does know what that is going to write me hate mail.
Ah, that's okay.
Bring it on.
They can hate us all that they want on the internet. As long as they don't show up at my house.
That would be a problem. I want to say more, but my brain just died.
Okay, well then I guess it's time for us to say goodnight.
Yes, goodnight.
So, goodnight everyone. We hope you enjoyed the show.